Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Keith, you ready for undefeated back on for the Celtics?
I am ready.
I think they're running the table now.
I don't think they're losing again.
Why? Who could beat them? Who on earth? What team? What group of players could defeat the Celtics right now?
I'll tell you, not the Clippers.
I don't think the Clippers have it this year. You know, they missed their window there when they had Kawhi and PG-13. They never really did much. Now PG-13 is off to the basketball factory that is the Sixers.
Yeah,
so that's
going
not
well,
happening.
Yeah.
But it was a nice night for the C's.
They look good.
They look like a good team.
I'm going to tell you, early on, I thought it looked, I'll play my side of the street.
Yeah, get over there.
Early on, I thought it looked a little rocky with Porzingis. Like, they were trying to get him worked in.
It's been out a long time.
He's been out a long time. Yeah. Although, again, we were blown away by the news in the middle of the show yesterday.
Oh, breaking news.
That he was back before Thanksgiving.
I know.
I thought he'd be back in 2025. And so I thought it was a little rocky to start. It was 10-10 while he was out there. It was 6-plus minutes. They were trying to get him shots. They were, I thought, shoehorning him in, forcing him into the offense. I didn't think he looked that great defensively either, by the way. Like, oh, you got to stop on Zubats on the first possession. Not really.
Take that, Zubats.
He missed a shot. Like, I don't know that it was his defense.
No, Zubats had a good game.
He did. After that first stint for Porzingis, and they went on a big run the second he got off the floor.
Yeah.
But that... After that first stint for Porzingis, he looked really, really good.
Yeah.
And the Celtics looked really, really good.
I think you and I, though, have realistic expectations for Porzingis, which is when he's out there, he's great, but he's not going to be out there. Like, he just isn't going to be out there all the time. There was, like, a couple of seasons where I felt the same way about Rob Gronkowski, where you're like, when he's out there, there's nobody better. But is he going to be out there every game? Fingers crossed, right? You're just like, every time he takes a hit or whatever, you're kind of holding your breath. And I feel that with Porzingis. Now, luckily, unlike a lot of other teams, that if they lost their third best player, you'd be like, they're probably done. Or can't go as far. That's the one thing that's really remarkable about the Celtics is they can and did win the title without Porzingis. And yet, we all recognize what a true unicorn he is. And when he's right, like how much more of a mismatch the Celtics are for every other team in the league, to have a guy out there that's 7'3", that can block shots, shoot threes, fits in well with this team is crazy. But, I mean, I don't know. I don't even know what a fair number to say. Like, how many games is he going to play? How many playoff games or what percentage of games is he going to play? I have no idea. That was the only thing, going back to when the Celtics traded for Porzingis, I was... maybe not as happy as you that they traded Marcus Smart, but I was like fine with them trading Smart. I was like, all right, you tried this. It didn't work. Mm-hmm. You're getting a better player, but how many games is he going to play? Like that was the only real drawback with Porzingis. It has been his whole career.
Yeah. So, you know, we can get into how much they actually need him. Cause I tend to be with you that this team does not need Porzingis to win a championship. He makes it a lot easier.
Oh,
obviously
you
want as many talented players as you can get to go win a title. But I never believed last year they needed him. They didn't last year. I guess the counterpoint would be, will the road through the postseason be any more difficult, and will you need Porzingis for that? I guess that would be the counterpoint to it. You're not going to play a bunch of injured teams and then a 5 seed in the NBA Finals every single year. You're fortunate to get that. No one's taking away the banner. But you were fortunate to get that road last year without Porzingis. Are you going to need him this year for that? We can get into it with all your phone calls. 617-779-7937. It's one of many ways you can get in touch with Jones and Keefe here on a Tier Tuesday.
Oh, yeah, what a day.
A Tom E. Tuesday. He'll join us at high noon. We also have Keefe for Madness at 1245. I should say, Keefe, the tiers today.
Yes.
Not NFL teams.
No, we're going to give the Patriots a break this week because, spoiler alert, they would have fallen in the tiers.
They would have gone under the dead body tier we were doing NFL tiers and last week's tiers.
We're just 2 short days away. What are we, 2 sleeps away from Thanksgiving?
Yeah.
So we're going to tier Thanksgiving food.
Thanksgiving food.
Yeah.
People love the Halloween candy, so we'll bring it back on a Tier Tuesday. That'll be a little over an hour from now. at 11:20. So mark that down. You can text the show 37937. Interact on Twitter and Instagram at Jones and Keefe. You can watch along and chat at twitch.tv/BostonWEEI. Always a healthy chat going on there. And you can watch on YouTube. Just subscribe to WEEI. Where do you think Porzingis helped the most last night, Keith?
I mean, I think he is just the guy defensively. I know you said there were times where you're like, all right, you know, he wasn't 100% locked in. He's coming back off a long injury. But I think defensively is where he does give them the most. I think they could score plenty of points with or without him. I know he's dynamic offensively, but just having that other body, especially on the nights that you don't have Horford. I like Kata maybe more than most. He has really crashed back down to earth. He had a great game last night.
Nice dunk last night.
Sort of everybody on the team. But I just think that's one of those things where can teams exploit these Celtics in the paint? You know, you saw the other night, the Cavs, for example, even though the Celtics beat them, I mean, they scored. They got back in the game because they were just getting so many easy buckets, and they had a ton of fast break and then in the paint points. So I just think that presence, having a guy out there that is at least a threat to block shots or make shots more difficult, is where he really stands out.
Yeah, I would agree. And I've been critical of their defense from night one. You know this. I think Porzingis, my only criticism was on his original stint. I think he really helped their defense after that first stint. I mean, it makes sense. He's been out forever. He missed a bunch of time in the playoffs last year. He's missed the whole start to this year. It makes sense that first stint would look rocky and disjointed, and I think he hurt their rhythm. But that was the first half of the first quarter. After that, I think he played good defense.
Yeah.
After that, I think he looked like he fit right in. And so I would feel good about that. I think he helped the most with their defense, though, Keith. The Clippers were on the second night of a back-to-back, as were the Celtics. They shot 43%, and they only hit seven threes, 27% from three.
Yeah.
So the one thing, did you hear any of Brad Stevens on the broadcast last night?
I actually didn't, no. I had the sound down.
He sat in for, I don't blame you for that. He sat in for the second quarter last night, okay? Yeah. And if you were watching on NBC Sports Boston, you know what I'm talking about.
Second quarter, the Celtics played well.
They did. They hit 12 threes.
The second quarter, I mean, this was similar to the Dolphins' second quarter.
Yeah.
Where the Dolphins were on, if they just did everything they did, they would have scored 100 points. The Celtics, based on what they did, they scored 51 points in the second quarter. So that would have been a 200-point game in regulation had they just kept that pace up.
They hit 51 points, 12 threes, which tied an NBA record for any quarter in NBA history. So Stevens was sitting there. First of all, he worked a little blue.
Oh, really?
Well, he dropped
a cuss on the broadcast.
He dropped an ass last night on the broadcast.
What?
Yeah, it was very aggressive. I gave Lucas the earmuffs there.
He's losing his filter a little bit, maybe.
Yeah, no, he's a little, you know, he's champion now.
No one's
going to tell him what to do.
No, sir.
So first of all, he's working a little blue.
Yep.
Second of all, you heard him on the broadcast. It's actually very amusing. They'd give up a layup and he'd go, another layup. And then they'd hit a layup in the paint. He'd go, another layup. And Scal called him. Scal's like, is this what you do during the game? You just sit here and you just like chastise the team?
Probably.
So it's actually a pretty good listen. But I think Drew Carter asked him at one point, what's the biggest issue for the team? And he cited the paint disparity. Scoring in the paint. He's like, it doesn't bother me that much offensively. He's like, we're going to score. I just want us taking good shots on offense. But the disparity for, and I think that's a way of saying easy buckets allowed at the other end, the points in the paint, are what concerns Brad Stevens. Now, last night, you'd think they did a really good job on that. The Celtics allow 53 paint points per game. Last night, it was 58.
Yeah.
So they were actually below their average. Zubats ate them up a little bit in there. There were some easy, uncontested layups. But largely to answer the question, I think that's where Porzingis helps. You felt how he alters shots at that end, how people are aware of him. That's where he makes the biggest impact. It's nice he can knock down a 25-foot three. It's nice that he can space the floor. I think his passing is very underrated. You know, like I think Jalen talked about this after the game, some backdoor cuts and things like this that I think Jalen said, I only had like twice all year. I had a bunch early last night because Porzingis moves the ball. So I think his offensive skill is obvious. I think where they needed him and where they missed him was on defense, because their defense, and you heard Brad talking about it last night, their defense had been subpar and not up to standard for them.
Well, that was the one spot. When you look at their lineup, they have such great defensive guards. They might have the two best defensive guards in the NBA in Holiday and White. And then Tatum and Brown, when they want to, can play defense. And then you say, all right, what else do you have? And, you know, Horford's not going to play all the time. And then it's Kata and Tillman. Like, so you're asking a lot out of those guys, see if they can throw him in there on the best team in the NBA and give him good kind of big man minutes. And they've had their ups and downs, both of those guys have. But if you swap out whatever minutes you were giving them to Porzingis, Like, that's not even fair to the other teams.
It's a wild upgrade.
Yes, it's a huge upgrade. And then there are going to be games, and depending on the matchups, too, where Porzingis and Horford are on the floor together, right? Like, they have a big lineup they can go to if they want. They can also go small. But there's just not a lot of teams that are going to be able to match up with the Celtics.
Okay. So you can jump in on this, 617-779-7937. What'd you think of Porzingis in his return? Where did the Celtics miss him the most? And you can also jump in on this question. Do they need him this year, Keith? They didn't a year ago. Do they need him to defend their title, raise banner 19? Do they need Porzingis for that?
So they don't need him to win the East. I'm pretty confident in that. I think I like Cleveland, but I like them to a certain degree. I like them to a certain level. They probably shouldn't be the second best team in the Eastern Conference, but in my opinion, they are. And I don't think you need them. I know they have Mobley and Allen, and those guys might each have a good game here or there, but I don't think you need it. If you get a healthy team out of the West, whoever that might be, whoever emerges from the West, whether it's that Minnesota team we just saw over the weekend, maybe Oklahoma City puts it all together, or maybe Jokic just takes the Nuggets and puts them on their back and gets all the way to the finals. At that point, you might, right? Like, you might. Like, I'm not going to say, you know, if Porzingis is out for that series, oh, they have no chance. That'd be crazy. But that might be a little bit different. Because last year, Luka and Kyrie, not a real, like, great team,
no,
right? Two elite offensive players, and that's kind of it. You know, it's amazing that they got as far as they did, but the Celtics didn't, you know, they shouldn't have had a problem with them, and they really didn't have a problem with them. But if you get a better team out of the West this year, that would be the one thing where you say, man, maybe you do need Porzingis.
So the only reason I bring it up is for what you just said. You're not going to get, I don't think, the number 5 seed Mavericks, who are Luka, Kyrie, and then what? And you're not going to get the Cavs without Donovan Mitchell, the Heat without Jimmy Butler, the Pacers without Tyrese Halliburton. You're just not going to get that.
No.
And so, look, you can say the Celtics were shorthanded too last year. They didn't have Porzingis, and that's fair. But those guys all got lost in the middle of these series a year ago. Like, Mitchell played a game. Butler, I'm not actually sure, started the series. Halliburton, all those guys started the postseason. And I think it'd be fair to say, all right, do we need Porzingis to match a healthy team?
Mm.
Maybe. You might. And I just don't know that you can count on Porzingis, which is the scariest thing about him. As much as he helps the team and it's obvious, I don't know that you can count on him being out there. So the problem is, if you do need Porzingis, and you feel that you do, and you feel like he gives the team that big of a lift, I don't know that it's going to be as easy as a year ago. Cleveland is better. They still don't scare me. I'm not sure anybody in the East scares me.
No, there's no way. The East right now, so Cleveland is 17-1, right? And then after them, you have the Orlando Magic have the third best record in the East.
Not scary at all.
That's not a team that you're worried about. I know you've been on the Knicks, and maybe that's the one team just based on personnel.
That's still team that if they can get the most out of their talent, that's still the scariest team in the East, but they're not a real threat to the Celtics. They're not.
No, and if it's Tatum, Brown, and the rest of the guys outside of Porzingis, they're still beating the Knicks. Maybe it goes to a sixth game or something, but like, they're still beating them. No, the West is much more intriguing to me. You know, if a healthy team emerges out of there, who is it? Because that's going to be a much more difficult path. You know, the Celtics could have a pretty easy cakewalk, even if everybody's healthy, in the Eastern Conference playoffs. Whereas in the Western Conference playoffs, I feel like whoever gets there had 3 legitimate series wins to get to the finals.
So you can jump in on this, 617-779-7937. We'll get to your phone calls all day long. Here on Jones and Keefe, just real quick, before we hit trending, I want to mix this in as well.
Uh-huh.
Jim Montgomery won his first game for the Blues last night, Keith.
Congrats, coach.
I heard Greg and Chris and everybody talking about this morning. Montgomery, very shady in his introductory press conference yesterday.
A bit.
About the timeline for when he was hired by the St. Louis Blues.
It was like 4 days after he was fired by the Bruins.
Do you think he was forcing his way out, Keith?
I don't.
Me neither.
It's an odd theory that has sort of popped up. And I guess because he was being so odd with the media, like, this is a great opportunity for Keith Spiracies everywhere.
Yeah.
Here's how I think it broke down. And I don't know. I haven't heard any argument to really go against this. He started the year lame duck coach, as we know. A lot of pressure on him. They get out to a slow start. A couple weeks ago, we had even said, all right, he is legitimately on the hot seat. There were like, it is a scoop. He is on the hot seat. Ownership is mad with the start of this. At that point, I wouldn't be shocked if the St. Louis Blues, with their connections, tampering, or whatever you want to call it, reached out to him or his agent and said, hey, just keep us in mind. If anything happens there, just know you got a spot. Which leads me to believe that's why he benched Pastrnak. That's why he pushed Marchand. That's why he did all these things.
That is kind of trying to force your way out, no?
No. I don't think it's trying to force your way out. Either this will work.
I'm going to be a little riskier, and if I lose a job, I have a safety net.
Yeah. Okay. Like anybody, if you know you have a job, can be a little bit more risky with this one. Doesn't mean he wouldn't just continue to coach here. What if they turn around? If they won 8 in a row, I don't think he would go and like put poop on the doorstep of Don Sweeney and light it on fire. Like, I think he'd be like, all right, I figured it out and I'm coaching here.
He could take the president's trophy from a few years ago and drive it around Costanza style.
It's such a short shelf life of an NHL head coach. I don't think he was forcing his way out, but I wouldn't be surprised if he also knew, hey, worst case scenario, so I got a job.
I guarantee that. And you can cry and bellyache about tampering. That's rampant throughout all sports.
Yeah.
The Bruins didn't want him. And he knew the Bruins didn't want him.
And the Blues probably knew that too.
Okay. I think the whole league knew it.
Yeah,
it wasn't that hard to figure out.
No, it's true.
When he's a lame duck going into his final year, the Bruins didn't really want him. It's not that hard to connect the dots. So I'm not going to go so far to say that he got himself fired or forced his way out. I'm not going to go that far.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not because I think it's out of bounds. That's not how I view it happening. I think the Bruins didn't want him. They made it clear they didn't want him.
Mm-hmm.
For self-preservation, Sweeney and Neely wanted him to start the year because it gave them a card they could play if the team didn't start the way it did. And so they played that card, Monty's out. But the second they hit the first game of the year, Keith, or they got right to the end of camp and the preseason and Monty knew he was going to go into the year without a contract, the second that happened, whether he did it directly to St. Louis where he used to work or through back channels with his agent or whatever, you put feelers out around the league that, hey, if I don't make it through this season, are there opportunities for
me?
And
I
guarantee he knew he had St. Louis in his back pocket.
Isn't that tampering?
Does that mean it would? I guess it would technically be tampering, but like you better believe all teams are doing this constantly.
And not to cross sports, but do you think the same thing happened with Alex Cora, and maybe he realized that, oh, there aren't as many opportunities as I thought.
Yeah.
I will resign now.
I will take your hush money and I will come in and I will take your money and manage this team down the stretch because it turns out he wasn't going to get the Yankees or Dodgers job or Phillies job. He wasn't going to get any of those.
Right.
So maybe. 617-779-7937. We'll mix those in as well. I thought that was an interesting discussion today with Greg and Chris on the Greg Hill Show this morning. If you missed any of that, on the Audacy app, AUDACY. Get that on your phone. Free, easy. Take it with you wherever you go this holiday season. A lot of driving on Thanksgiving, so a good thing to have on your phone. We'll take all your Celtics thoughts and your Bruins phone calls. How are the Celtics shaping up for some NBA awards this year? ESPN released a poll where they took the temperature around the league of what awards the Celtics could win. We'll get to that.
Yeah, as soon as they was pressuring me up the court as a ball handler, and as soon as I broke the line of the defense, that's when I knew I was going to have KP. They wasn't going to let me just get straight to the basket, so I knew I would have KP, so I just put it up there for him and let him do the rest. But Cookies and Cream is back. Let's get it.
Jaylen Brown after the game. Cookies and Cream back.
Cookies and Cream. That's a good nick. I don't know if that's Sonic and Knuckles, but it's good.
It's pretty good.
That's
it's pretty great. It's not Sonic and Knuckles. No, but
Sonic and Knuckles is all time, but Cookies and Cream, that's good. You can make some shirts, a poster.
I'm surprised they haven't.
Are posters popular with the kids? Remember when we were kids, Jones? They're posters. My whole room, I had posters on the ceiling.
Oh, yeah.
Don't worry about those ones. I had posters of all kinds of stuff on the walls.
What do you mean?
Wall to wall.
What's all kinds of stuff mean?
Don't worry about it when it was up there.
Classic hall ass poster.
Yeah.
Legit. No, I didn't have that one. But it was wall to wall. It'd be like Ken Griffey, Barry Sanders, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Deion Sanders. You name it.
Sean Kemp. I was going to say, we talked about how we had the same Rain Man poster.
Yep. I think I had a Grandmama, Larry Johnson, but he wasn't dressed as
nice
Grandmama.
One.
He was just Larry Johnson.
There was a Larry Johnson one that was almost like a full length wall.
Size your door.
Yeah, or maybe the size of a hoop. Like, you get, like, one that was, 10 feet up or something,
like
a Grandmama, like,
life
dunk
size.
It. Yeah.
I had a good Bernard King one. It was, no easy buckets, which is true. It's also a metaphor for life. There are no easy buckets.
Was he?
You could score. He could fill it up. Bernard King?
Yeah, but you could get some easy buckets on him, I feel.
He didn't defend.
Yeah,
but
well,
he could
it's an odd person to pick for that tagline, I would think.
Well, it was him.
Like the glove, Gary Payton, I would get no
Payton's
easy buckets.
Payton's another good one, yeah.
I would understand that.
Yeah, he'd shut you down.
Yeah.
They could really foul back in the day.
Yeah.
The hand checking.
Bill Laimbeer.
It was a different sport.
You know, the Mad Boys Pistons, I would understand that.
Yeah, yeah.
I understand that less for Bernard King, but I got you. Yeah, our poster's popular. I don't know.
I have no idea.
I used to cut out the Slam magazine. That's what I used to do.
Oh, yeah. You get like little mini posters. They're small.
Well, they'd give you a poster in the middle of Slam, but I'd also cut some stuff out of there. Yeah.
Sure, you would. Make a little collage.
Yeah.
There's Jones doing a little, hoops collage.
Scrapbooking on my wall.
I like it.
Exactly. So good nickname, though.
Yeah.
They get Porzingis back last night. They look very good. Did they need Kristaps Porzingis to win the title this year? They did not a year ago.
They did not.
They also had an absurdly easy path. And if you feel they need Porzingis this year, what's the likelihood you're actually going to have him? Oof. As good as he looked last night, he looked great when he came back in the NBA Finals, too. And next thing you know, you're going to be without him. So you can jump in on this. 617-779-7937. We mixed in some thoughts on Jim Montgomery. His first game with the Blues last night, a win. It's a suspicious timeline with him. There's no doubt about that.
Oh, it's very strange.
So you can jump in on that. We'll get to the Red Sox as well. Sounds like they're one of the teams that has made an offer to Juan Soto, Keith.
How
a real
that?
Offer. You've been wanting financial figures.
Yeah, no, I'm curious.
I'm not sure we have all the details there.
I feel like they've made some financial offers to guys in recent years, and they just missed.
And lowballed them.
Yeah.
Okay.
Your Seth Lugos of the world.
Okay.
But maybe this is different. I still don't think that it is, but maybe it is. There's a lot of smoke out there. Are they not allowed to sign anybody yet?
No. You can't Yusei Kikuchi signed yesterday, as you told me, in the grab.
3 for $63.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a small deal.
It's not nothing.
All right.
So, you're allowed to sign players.
Cool.
We'll get to the Red Sox coming up. In the meantime, let's knock out some Celtics phone calls here.
Right.
Cam is in Worcester. Get us started today, Cam.
Hello.
Hey, how we doing, boys?
Doing great.
You guys did a great show.
Thank you.
We do.
It's my first time on radio, but I just want to say, I do think the Seas could win without Porzingis, but he does add that extra cap of security. You know, he's such a dynamic threat, whether it's his height or his rebounding. I mean, he can for being that tall and being able to shoot, he's a real threat. So I think they could, but in order to get this done, they got to use him sparingly. So if the main four can get the job done in any given game in a regular season, whatever.
So I'm not sure I agree with that point. Like, how do you manage it?
What about back-to-backs?
No. That to me is an easy one. If you say we're not going to play him on back-to-backs, that's fine. But if he's cleared, he's cleared. He can be out there. You never know how long you're going to have him for. I'd lean in on playing him. And if you have like a minutes cap on him, like what did he play last night? 22, 23?
23, but they also won the game by 100. So.
Well, fair. But if you don't want to play him more than like 30 minutes a night, you have like kind of an internal cap. Maybe you got to lean on him more on games here and there. But if you don't want to run him into the ground and you really want to lean in on that in the regular season, fine. If you want to give him the second night on back-to-backs off, also fine. I just, while he's here and he's available, I'd play him because he could get hurt tomorrow and you lose him and you might as well maximize him while he's here.
Yeah, it's different than like, you know, going back to Rob Gronkowski, he got hurt 1 year blocking on a PAT. And you're like, what are you doing? Like, just let him play tight end, right? Like, don't do anything extra. Basketball, different animal. So, if he's cleared to play, I'm going to play him. You don't know when he's going to get hurt. You play him twice a week, he could still get hurt versus 3 or 4 times a week. So, especially in the early going, I would definitely sit him on back-to-backs. And why don't you stagger him and Horford? Horford plays one night, Porzingis plays the next.
Yeah, you can do
it. Then your team's kind of in good shape. And then those games after that, then they can play together. So, I'd be in favor of that. And also, like, the minutes thing, I wouldn't really restrict his minutes necessarily, but
if it's a blowout and they're up in the fourth quarter, he doesn't need to see the floor. Yeah,
no, it's more
situational, probably.
Right, sometimes Mazzulla keeps those guys out there a little bit longer than maybe other coaches would.
Yeah.
He's a maniac.
Well, is it him or is it the players? Is it Tatum and Brown? They want to chase numbers and stuff like that.
Yeah,
and
if you're Porzingis, it's like, dude, you're not chasing 20 points per game.
You got to stand up to Porzingis in that. So if Tatum wants to go chase a triple-double in the fourth quarter, go for it. But you know, you don't do that with Porzingis, is what I would say.
Yeah.
And the caller makes a good point about their ceiling so much higher with Porzingis. That's true. That's obvious.
Yeah.
I don't think they need him to win a championship.
Picking them. So let's just say he's out for the year. Hypothetically, he's out for the year. Celtics are the field. I'm still taking the Celtics.
Me too.
If you know that he's playing for a fact, then you feel even more confident, like the caller was saying. Now you're like, all right, whatever series you thought might be 6 or 7 games is now like 4 or 5 games.
Yeah, I don't think they need him. So if and when he gets hurt, I'm not going to say they can't win a championship. But for those of you that feel that you need him, That's kind of where you're going to have to go to.
It was weird last year, I thought.
I will be more difficult without Porzingis this year. There's no way you're going to get three injured teams and then a five seed in the final. That won't happen
again. No, it won't. But it was weird last year when he came in, because he was like in and out during the playoffs, mm-hmm. and he had a game against the Mavericks where he played really well, and everyone's like, see? He's the difference maker.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, not really. Like, you want him. He is very helpful, but it's still up to Tatum and Brown.
No, 100%.
Like, those are the guys that are going to win it or lose it.
They have enough talent to win even without him. Yeah. Like, more talent than any other team, even without him. He's an embarrassment of riches is what he is. One thing I will say, he is a guy who gives the team a lift. He gives the team a lift. Like, the crowd a lift, the team a lift.
The WWE entrance?
That was pretty good.
I like it.
That was pretty good.
Terp was calling for that yesterday.
He was.
Yeah,
it was good. So that was a real tangible thing last night. I don't know that you get that every single night, but with that return, the pop that got was tangible to me. 617-779-7937. Johnny is in Brooklyn. Go ahead, Johnny.
What's up, guys? Really quick, what you've been able to do with that Christian Gonzalez interview, I mean, it's must listen now. It's amazing.
Well,
you guys,
Johnny,
deserve all the credit in the world.
Johnny, let me tell people where to get. First of all, that was a Ken Laird idea. Second of all, go to the Audacy app, AUDACY. Get that on your phone. It's free. You can listen to our man-to-man coverage with Christian Gonzalez. That is three men, 10 questions with Gonzalez every Monday. What was your point, though, Johnny?
Yeah, it's classic. Okay, so just on Porzingis, I mean, the seat of my pants ripped when that trade went through. I couldn't have been happier. But now that new CBA is in order, you know, I look at the Celtics, and I think the biggest threat to them is that CBA kicking in next year. And I think as long as they have Tatum, Brown, and Derek White, those other expensive players, you know, they're great and I want to have them. But if we have to get rid of somebody, and I don't know if you'll be able to trade Porzingis, you know, next year because of that injury factor. And so if that means that they end up having to trade Jaylen Brown, for example, I'm not going to be too happy about it. And my pants won't rip in the same way.
So, okay.
All right, guys.
Understood.
Appreciate you.
Did he say the seat or the seam?
I think maybe
the seat. The seat of your pants ripped?
It's hard to say. I don't know. I mean, you're fired up.
I mean, look, we're all built a little differently.
I don't think his team needs to worry about trading anybody right now.
So
he's talking about long-term.
Well, I agree with that. So this is a long-term, big-picture question, but let's go with it. Who's the odd man out? They have a bunch of highly compensated players.
So this would be the new owners?
Yes. When they have to make a financial call, who do you think is the odd man out?
Well, Horford's going to retire soon. He's not one of the big money guys, but he's not going to. That money's going to come off the books. You could probably patch it together with Kata Tillman types, so that's going to be a little bit cheaper. Even Drew Holiday's not the youngest dude in the world.
Yeah,
how much longer is Drew Holiday going
to
play?
I think it comes down to Porzingis and Holiday, and do either of them have a ton of trade value? Probably not at that point.
No.
But that's worth the sacrifice. I think we all acknowledge.
Yeah.
That's worth the sacrifice if you win two or three championships in the meantime.
Oh, my God, yeah.
So that's a problem.
I mean, Drew Holiday's 34 right now. So, I mean, I wonder how many... I know they just signed him, but like, I wonder how many more years he's playing.
You think it looks like he's slowing down, or do you think he's just pacing himself for the postseason?
I do think he's slowing down a little bit. I still would take him defensively more over almost any guard in the league. Maybe his teammate might be better, but close. But he did this last year in the regular season too, where I think come playoff time is where you really saw his value. I just thought he was a guy when the situations were crazy, he would calm everything down, and like he was such a difference maker for him. So I don't really expect big numbers for him during the regular season. But yeah, I think he's dipping down.
I was mostly underwhelmed by him during the regular season last year. Then he had a phenomenal postseason run. So I'm willing to wait that one out, but I'm watching it again. Is he slowing down or is he just pacing himself? Meanwhile, ESPN, you just mentioned Defensive Player of the Year. ESPN came out with their NBA awards a month plus into the year. They polled all their insiders on how they would vote. For MVP, Keith.
Yes.
Jason Tatum third, but he got zero first place votes. So three players got first place votes. Tatum finished in front of Shai Gilgeous-Alexander.
It's the last 3 years again, right, where he's going to be a lock first-team All-NBA guy, but not a real MVP candidate.
So Gilgeous-Alexander was fourth, but he got first place votes. Tatum was third, 1 point in front of Gilgeous-Alexander. They did a vote for three spots, 5 points for first place, three for second, one for third.
All right.
Anthony Davis is second ahead of Tatum.
He is having a good year. That'll fall off.
25% of the first place votes, and then Jokic running away with the MVP, 2/3 of the first place votes. But Tatum third right now, if you want to put any stock in that. Although, again, no top votes. Sixth man of the year?
Peyton Pritchard.
Peyton Pritchard, 55% of the votes.
Yep.
That's He's killing it. That's ahead of your guy, Buddy Hield.
Buddy Hield's a good player.
You saw Jalen on social media last night. Was like, no question.
Easily.
He's the sixth man.
He should be. Another good game for him. 20 points off the bench. He's shooting lights out. I know Mazzulla talked post-game about his defense. He's still not a great defensive player, but he tries. So, yeah, no, he's been a spark. He's been a guy that, you know, with some of the injuries or just when you kind of give those guys a breather, you can still score. You can still extend the lead. He's having his best year by far. So, yeah, he should be in the mix.
Coach of the year, Kenny Atkinson, 100% of the votes.
Wow.
Joe Mazzulla, though, is second. He got the next most votes.
Good.
And he deserves it.
Yeah, he did.
He should get that recognition. But what's noteworthy there and why I brought it up, no defensive player of the year votes for any Celtics. None. Not White, well, not Holiday.
I didn't see the list, but did Victor Wembanyama or who are the guys that are on there?
Running away with it? Hang on, I'll get it for you.
Because it typically is a big man award. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's why when Marcus Smart won it, it was such a big deal. He was the first guard or the point guard really since Gary Payton. Like, it's usually shot blockers.
Oh, I'm sorry, that's improved player. Where is defensive player?
Ben Wallace, the Kembe Mutombo.
Wembanyama, Anthony Davis, Draymond Green, Dyson Daniels.
Okay.
OG Anunoby, Franz Wagner, Evan Mobley, Jalen Suggs, Jaren Jackson, Lu Dort, Chet Holmgren. 11 players got votes, no Celtics.
Oh, so that is surprising, I guess. If you're going to have guys like Suggs on there over Derek White, I would put Derek White over Holiday right now. Like for this year, dude's blocking shots. That is a miss. You know, just when you think they finally properly rated Derek White. Remember last year, everybody made a big deal. He wasn't on the top 100. Then this year, he's in like the top 50 or 40.
Yeah.
And
he's on the Olympic team, which is a bit much.
He's on the freaking Olympic team. He's a gold medalist, and he can't get one of the 11 defensive votes. Like, all right.
617-779-7937. You can jump in on the Celtics. Tatum, his MVP candidacy. Pritchard for sixth man. Does Mazzulla deserve some Coach of the Year votes? And where are the defensive love for the Celtics? Probably tells you how poorly they've been playing defensively to this point. You can jump in with Porzingis and his return. Jim Montgomery, his debut with the St. Louis Blues. And let's get to the Red Sox. Keith has been very, very, very dismissive of Juan Soto. Turns out the Red Sox have indeed made an offer to Juan Soto. Are we feeling any better about their chances of landing him? We'll get to it next. Jones and Keith here on WEEI. Discussion about Kristaps Porzingis, his return to the Celtics last night. Jim Montgomery, is he forcing his way out in Boston? I don't think so, but I think he knew he had another offer all lined up in St. Louis because that happened real quick. But I'd imagine the same thing happened with Claude when he was fired and Bruce Cassidy, a lot of these coaches, when that goes down. You usually have your next move lined up just to secure yourself in case you're out of a job, especially when you go into the final year as a lame duck head coach. But the Bruins didn't want him. Make no mistake about that. The Bruins did not want Jim Montgomery. And that's where I would focus most of my ire. Other than that, it was just Jim Montgomery lining up his next gig because he knew his employer didn't want him. And we talked about some NBA awards as well. Let's get into the Red Sox, though. Some interesting news in the last 24 hours. Billy told me there's an update even in the last 15 minutes. Let me set the table, and then we'll get you the update here. John Morosi on Twitter said last night that Juan Soto has offers from five teams.
Woo!
That is a report from Randy Miller, I think of NJ.com, if I'm not mistaken.
All right, Randy.
Red Sox, Dodgers, Mets, Yankees, Blue Jays. Okay?
All right.
Randy Miller, in that same report, says that Juan Soto is believed to be asking for a 15-year deal.
What?
Worth $700 million.
The Ilya Kovalchuk deal.
Shohei Ohtani's contract was 10 years, $680. And a bunch of it deferred.
Is there not a cap on years in baseball? I feel like I should know this.
I don't think
there's
so.
There's not, right?
No, I don't think so. Hockey did that.
All the other sports have done that, I believe. Well, hockey and basketball have a limit.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're right. Every sport except baseball.
Yeah, after Rick DiPietro, the NHL enough of that.
Does football have one?
Maybe football doesn't, but like who's signing a
right?
It's the short shelf life.
Even if you sign somebody for 10 years, it's just guaranteed
it's
money
fake.
In the first 2 years and it's all fake.
But
right,
basketball does to protect the GMs. Hockey obviously does now.
I don't think baseball.
DiPietro and Kovalchuk had these insane deals.
I don't think baseball has a cap.
Because when we were talking about the last couple of years, guys, we've seen, 10, 11, 12, 13-year deals, I think? Well, actually, didn't Fernando Tatis, I'll look this up, he signed a crazy deal.
Yeah, Tatis has a long deal. Who are some of the other players that signed early? I mean, Ohtani just got 10 years last year. I think Betts had a pretty long deal, didn't he?
The longest current deal in the Major League Baseball is a 14-year deal signed by Fernando Tatis Jr. Okay.
Bryce Harper got 13.
There you go. Thank
you. Harper got 13. Stanton got 13. Trout, Betts, Yamamoto,
12.
And Julio Rodriguez are all at 12.
Okay.
So he wants 15 years, which would be the most years.
15 would take him through his age 41 season or something
but
like that.
But doesn't he also want opt-outs after like 3 and 4?
Probably. So he wants $700 million. A lot of Otani's contract was deferred. It's believed that Soto isn't interested in deferred money. So not only does he want the money, he wants it. And this is, I never got why Otani structured his deal that way. No, he's like, give me the money now. I want the money now.
So $700 million divided by 15 would be 46.6 average annual.
I'll be honest, I don't even hate the AAV. The 15 years is ridiculous,
so
but
46.6 would be the second highest average annual value behind, obviously, Shohei Ohtani.
Yeah.
He's 10 for 700.
Okay, he's 26. He just hit the market. Now, Billy, what did you say you saw an update here in the last 15 minutes or so?
Hector Gomez?
Yep.
He said, source, the Red Sox increased their original offer to Juan Soto both in years and total value.
Okay, so is that
so they went from 2 and 50.
So is that a good or a bad thing, Keith? They're already increasing their offer. Does that mean, holy
tells
crap,
you how
we
low
were,
they originally were.
Holy crap, we were so far off.
Yeah.
Or were they just the first to meet with him? They made an offer, other people upped their offer, and now they're keeping the pace.
It depends. Did they say, did Juan Soto and Scott Boras say no? Or were they just like, okay, like we'll take it under consideration?
I think if they're taking a second, if they're making a second offer, I think it's under consideration. No?
No, I'm saying the first one. Was the first offer under consideration, or did they look at the first one and be like, seriously?
Here's my guess. The Red Sox probably lowballed him for sure. They met with
good
him first.
Good strategy.
Yeah,
that's worked out so
classic.
Well for
him. It's brilliant. Yeah. So they probably lowballed him. Then Boras and Soto met with, after the Red Sox and Mets, were those the first two he met with?
Yeah.
He met with the Yankees and someone else. Maybe Blue Jays. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, the Blue Jays think they had a meeting. Maybe they didn't.
So I just wonder if the Red Sox made an offer. They went into the other ones, and Scott Boras said, oh, by the way, here's what those teams offered. Can you match it? Can you up it? Can you do X, Y, and Z? And the Red Sox have upped their offer. It doesn't mean they matched the highest offer on the board, but they've upped their offer.
Like Boras, unlike last year when Boras was negotiating Jordan Montgomery and Blake Snell, which he fumbled badly, both those guys. He is in the catbird seat now with Soto. In the prime of his career, you have the marquee teams all bidding. I wonder if he straight up tells them what other teams have offered, or if he just says, like, your offer is not the highest right now, and then is it more like a blind bid, or are they like, oh, that's what they're offering? We'll match that. I don't know. I mean, It can't be a bad thing that they're upping the money, but I wonder how like quick that was. It's like, hey, here's our offer. And it's like, oh, you're still talking to other teams? Like, we're going up again.
Well,
which Boras and Soto are going
to
be like, all right.
There's two ways to look at it.
They'll up it again.
There's two ways to look at it. Either they did their first lowball offer and they're like, holy crap, we're so far away. Let's make a more respectable lowball offer
so
that it's not completely embarrassing when the news leaks out what he signed for and what we offered, because it will leak out. Or it's the other thing. We made an offer. We felt it was competitive. It got up by New York to keep him. And now we're upping our offer to out-leverage them. I'm not telling you I know the answer, but it's one of those two things.
If you would, so would you be willing to go 15 years?
Well, that's what I was just going to ask. And let me ask it a little differently. Would I be willing to go 15 years for Soto? Yeah. Is it smarter to go 15 years and $700 million for Juan Soto, Keith?
Yeah, no, silly.
Or is it smarter to do the Bob Nightingale plan that came out the other day that the Red Sox want not one but two of Corbin Burns, Max Fried, Blake Snell? So is it smarter to sign two starting pitchers than Juan Soto for 15 years, $700
million?
I still want Soto.
I think so. I love Burns.
I don't know.
I paused because of Burns, but
I don't know that it's smarter.
No.
But the Red Sox need a household name and a superstar. Yeah. That's what they need.
And I think it just adds so much more. Not that Soto is like a polarizing figure, but getting him from the Yankees and then having him go up against the Yankees now, like, adds so much more juice to that rivalry, which is needs a little kick in the shorts. So, yeah, I would still lead that just because I like Max Fried, but he's no, like, guaranteed, like, stud Cy Young guy. Burns is closer to that.
None of this whole show likes Blake Snell. None of us.
Nobody does.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think those pitchers.
So, like, Max Fried and Blake Snell or Juan Soto? Juan Soto.
And, like,
I don't
care. Juan Soto plays every day.
Yeah.
And I know any player can get hurt all the time. It just feels like baseball players get hurt,
and
or
think,
pitchers get hurt all the time.
I think you're right. They'd also get the – I think there's a benefit to stealing a player away from the Yankees. I'm not even talking head-to-head in the standings. Oh, we made them weaker and we got better. There's that benefit.
Yeah.
But there's also Red Sox fans going, oh, we outspent New York. They
great.
Want him.
Yep.
We outspent the Yankees. We outspent Steve Cohen and the Mets. The Dodgers aren't even in. like we outspent those teams, there would be a real benefit to fans reinvesting and recommitting to the team because you did that.
One thing, and I know it's the cost of doing business, but if you have your biggest free agent signing in, I don't know, 7 years, and it'd be way bigger than what you had before. I mean, David Price was a huge contract, but this is another whole stratosphere of contracts. The cost of doing business often is giving these players these opt-outs, but that to me is like a little deflating. Like if you finally come together and you give a 15-year deal,
yep,
and $700 million, you're like, here we go. And then he has three really good years.
And then he opts out.
And he hits free agency before he's 30, and you have to start it all over again.
I'm still doing it.
I hate it, though.
Oh, no. I mean, that look, it's part, not ideal. Part, you like, want him.
Bryce Harper signed a deal with Philly with no opt-outs, which is kind of unique at this point. Usually these guys all have these little ways they
make
money. If the
cost of doing business is an opt-out, I'm doing it.
It's just frustrating. Like, I know it's still a good deal, and you still have the player, and maybe he'll re-sign, but it's like, is he looking for more money after that? I mean, yeah, sure, everybody in the world's looking for more money, but
I think he's,
is that what it is?
And then, I think his immediate comments after they lost the World Series about, yeah, I'm going to the highest bidder,
yeah,
and the fact he's already on his third team, like, yeah, he's a mercenary, yeah, and he wants the most money. There's nothing wrong with that, yeah, I don't think. And so, yeah, he's going to have an opt-out 3 or 4 years in. I'd pay him. And then we'll reevaluate in 3 or 4 years. What do you guys think? Red Sox have made an offer. They've upped their offer to Juan Soto. Are they lowballing him? Are they doing it for PR, clicks, headlines, etc.? Or are they really in? You can jump in. 617-779-7937. We've talked Celtics, Bruins, Red Sox here in the first hour of Jones and Keefe. What was that?
Ken just sent us some Juan Soto thing. What is this? Is it like some promotional thing?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
What?
It's
what?
Not him making,
I haven't seen
decision.
It.
It's some
it?
Nonsense. He's like sponsoring something. And it's Juan Soto on Instagram sitting in front of a bunch of microphones and then announcing that he's got some like energy drink.
Nice.
But Ken says there's a red microphone in there.
Ooh.
Yeah, follow the clues.
Red?
Yeah. Just like the Red Sox.
Oh,
Jones.
The Red Sox.
Cincinnati?
Yeah.
Going to Cincinnati.
I was thinking
the
Cardinals.
The Dark Horse team, the Cincinnati, yeah. Cincinnati Reds.
Mystery team, the St. Louis Cardinals.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Ken. Thank you very much. 617-779-7937. We'll get to your phone calls. We'll also get back into the Patriots, their outlook moving forward. How long until they're actually good again? That's next.